Welcome, all you liars, infidels, and fools. My name is Haley.
And my name's Brandy. And we are Easy Killer.
Easy Killer.
Easy Killer.
What's up, guys?
Welcome to our world.
Yes, you are back again.
True crime and fucked up shit.
True crime and fucked up shit. I have a bad habit of repeating you, and I'm sorry.
It's okay. It makes me feel more important than I am.
Right.
It's like I have someone constantly echoing me everything I say.
You got your own personal hype woman over
into
here.
Into the hills, exactly. Right.
I think people need to know we're from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yep.
Born and raised myself.
And bred.
And bred. Literally, my last name is something to do with breeding.
With breading.
With breading.
Right.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, I think we grew up around the same area of town, didn't we?
Yeah.
You say you grew up off 7th Street?
Yeah.
No. No, you didn't? I thought you said that.
No, it was Southside Drive and all that. 7th Street's where the strippers live.
Well, exactly. That's where I lived.
Oh, no. That's... Okay, yeah, when I was like 5, I did live off on 7th Street, but which is like the Churchill Downs if you're not from the Louisville area. Like,
we are famous for our horses.
And
our breading.
It takes us 10 years to like speed up to a fucking 5-second race, and I remember when they shot that one horse right between the eyes on TV.
I've literally never been to a Kentucky Derby in my entire life.
I don't think anybody I know has. But a lot of people from the East End go, and it used
famous,
to...
Well, dude, many famous people, like Anna Nicole Smith's baby daddy. He's from Louisville, and he always goes to the Derby every year, because I see him on TV, and so does Joey Fatone.
It's crazy how everybody sees the Churchill Downs as this mysterious area over there. Like, it's so beautiful. I'm like, you know you're in the hood, right? This is, like, if you go over there, like, when it's not Derby, you're going to get shot. No,
yeah. Okay, so we had to pause because my cat's freaking out, which is weird because it's usually one of my dogs that are freaking out.
Right.
I don't know what's going on.
She's
but
in heat. He's in heat.
Anyways, we were talking about the Kentucky Derby and living in Louisville, Kentucky, which is the heart of the Kentucky Derby.
Right.
Like I said.
And we have wonderful cases here in Louisville, Kentucky. So that's
wonderful.
What we're...
They're beautiful cases.
I sound like the fucking ex-president. God, where is my speech? Fuck.
No, I'm telling you to say we have some wonderful cases.
We have great, great many cases.
We have great murders here in Kentucky. You guys visit us.
So, in the city of Louisville, Kentucky, which is, I love my city. Like, I've always liked it here. I don't think I could be anywhere else. But
I mean, for me, it's home, but at the same time, like, I feel like there's so many better places I could be living right now.
Right. But, like, I always felt like I couldn't live anywhere my family or somebody couldn't live. I couldn't be one of those people. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
Some people would head to the beach. Me, when I go to the beach, I just like fucking swimming in the pool and laying
out.
I
live in the mountains. Fuck the beach. I mean, the beach is nice.
You know what?
I live in the mountains.
Fuck the mountains. And I'll tell you that later. Fuck you, mountains. I'm telling you. I've been on Reddit and I've been listening to all these fucking things about people going missing in the mountains. It's like really the Hills Have Eyes shit. But mountain version. Like, a little kid named...
The mountains have eyes.
And I'm telling you, I want you to Google when you get off here, and this could be just a topic or whatever for a next podcast episode we do, but Google how many people about them going missing in the national parks. I watched a documentary on it.
Oh, okay, I have heard of that before, but I have never watched anything on it, which is weird because I love national parks.
It's, wow. So. And so now I'm never, I love going to Gatlinburg and all that.
I'm
but
never going to the mountains.
I'm not, that's it.
Serve.
That's it. They done made me
the
scared.
The ain't getting these eyes.
Right. You ain't getting me.
Yeah, like we said, we have some wonderful cases in Louisville. Louisville, especially, but Kentucky as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we are going to talk about tonight is one that kind of set the stage for a lot of, what am I trying to say here, Brandy?
I think you're trying to say
potential victims of domestic violence. Yeah?
Yes. So the case she's going to be referring to tonight is actually what led to Kentucky's Vine system, which I think every state has now.
It's nationwide now, yeah.
And the Vine system is what calls you. So say that you're in a domestic violence situation.
It stands for Victim Information Notification Every Day.
Yes. Which means, like, if you're in a situation where somebody attacks you or you're hurt, you're in a DVO, EPO situation.
Well, even if it's not just domestic violence, it could be any sort of violent, it's any sort of violent crime.
Basically, so say
if you're a victim of a violent crime, you have those rights.
Yeah, so say if your family goes to jail, you can sign up for the Vine and know when they're going to be released. That helps saves lives, and that's what this story is about.
Yes. And it happened in our
sweet little town.
I always say little town. I don't know how little it is
anymore.
But this happened in the St. Matthews area of Louisville, which is known as, you know, the richer part of town.
Yes.
It's a nice area to live. I've never lived there before because
it's expensive as fuck. Let's just be honest.
I'm from the South End, so
yeah, we are South End.
It's hard. Babies. It's hard to take the South End out of the girl, you know.
And I am, you know, a prime example of that.
Take the girl out of the South End, but you can't take the South End out of the girl. Yeah, right? So South End girls don't do very well in the East End. So St. Matthews is, as we refer to it, is the East End of Louisville. And there's a few malls out there. St. Matthews Mall, particular, is where this crime happened.
Oh, man. I'm excited to hear it. I'm really fucking pumped about it, honestly. And if you ain't pumped about it, I think you would. Also, I'm going to pause in here and say thank you guys for listening to us. And we had a great last three episodes. And I hope you've made it past to here so you can hear my thank you, goddammit.
Yeah, and if you're out listening, then fuck you.
Right, fuck it. Balls to the motherfucking wall, Haley.
Who cares, because they're not listening, right? Anyways. So, this happened when I was a baby.
What year did it happen?
1993.
Ooh, yeah. I was 9 years old.
Yeah, so this happened December 6th, 1993. In our hometown of Louisville, not Louisville or Louisville.
God, I hate when people say that. It's Louisville. 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 That's how you say it, guys.
Louisville.
That's probably why they got that damn shirt that goes, has all the different sayings on it.
I think they have bumper stickers. They have everything. They're like us. We have bumper stickers. We have fanny packs.
Right. Keep Louisville weird.
Scraping at their food bowls, but I'm not feeding them because I'm working, so shut up.
Gordy, get it under control.
Right. Anyways, so Mary Byron is the lovely young lady who was murdered on December 6th, 1993. And she was 21 years old. It was actually her 21st birthday.
Man, that's some shit. What did you do on your 21st birthday?
So we went out, we went to 4th Street, and then my sister ended up fucking puking everywhere, and, like, we had to leave because she was puking everywhere, and she was, like, slumped over outside of Sully's, like, just gone.
I don't think...
Is it your 21st birthday, or is it mine?
Right, and I don't think anybody who lives in Louisville has not been puked, humped over at Sully's. Mm-hmm. I think one time I punched a girl in the face and got kicked out of there, and I've never been back.
Back to Mary. Mary Frances Byron was her legal name. She graduated from Assumption High School in 1991, which was an all-girls Catholic school. Mm-hmm. My aunt actually was the class of 93, and she said she knew, like, she never, like, hung out with her or anything, but she knew who she was, and... You know, she said she was, like,
really upset.
Sweet girl, you know, like, right. That's what they say about a mole, you know, and I'm not saying that it's not true, but, you know, they always say that, which is, I mean, it happens to the best people sometimes.
That's true.
Which is sad, but.
That's horrible. Well, we haven't even told the story, and I feel like...
No. Well, she was...
Thank God for edit.
Right. Ah. She was a hairstylist, and she worked at the JCPenney Hair Salon.
Aww.
Inside of St. Matthew's Mall.
I still say I wish I was a teenager in the 80s. I don't know why.
Me too.
I think it would have been cool.
I was a teenager in the 2000s, and it was all right. I mean, the early 2000s were cool, but then, like, after 2008, everything, like, went to shit.
Right. I think there was a big depression in 2008, but I was a teenager in 98 and 99, 2000, 2001, something like that. It was wild. But it would have been fun to be, like, a teenager in the 80s, and I don't know why the fuck I'm talking about this right now in the middle of a goddamn...
It's okay. It's over. It's fine. This is not a very long story, so we need things to plug in.
The good thing is that you can edit through this, so that's a good
thing. And the also good thing is that we finally fucking figured out how to record a podcast remotely.
Right.
Oh, and it was right under our noses the entire time. All that shit I talked about you having a fucking Mac computer.
Kind of came in handy. You know, so we say.
Mac saved our life.
Let's start over with the Byron story, because I think we talked so much that we got lost the point.
It's fine. Okay. I remember where I was. Okay. She dated this man, Donovan Harris, off and on for about 4 years. And he was, I think, like 25-ish when this happened. I couldn't find, like, exact... Because this was a really hard one to research. Right. There's, like, nothing on the internet. But you know what? Even if there's nothing on the internet for it, you know what? That doesn't fucking stop me from finding shit, all right?
Hell no, it doesn't. We got our own
fucking... I went through pages and pages and pages of old Courier Journal news articles looking for this shit. And I had to search Mary Byron. And you know how many times the word Mary and Byron has been printed in the Courier Journal?
I bet a lot.
Oh, my God. Ridiculous amount.
Especially...
So I think...
Especially with her being, you know, basically she's a pillar of our community. She's kept a lot of people safe since, you know.
I mean, there's like, you know, like the story that tells you what happened, but there's not a whole lot of like details
of,
you know what I mean? So
of leading up to
it. I think I saw that he was around 25 years old. So he was a few years older than her at the time. And her family really liked him. They said he came over for dinner all the time, and he would do his laundry there, and he was just, like, a part of the family. I mean, they were together for 4 years. That's, you know, that's a long time.
Can you imagine?
So, he probably was. So, about 3 weeks before Mary was murdered, she was raped at gunpoint. Over the course of 3 hours by her ex-boyfriend, Donovan Harris.
What? So, the guy that was with her for 4 years.
Yes, he apparently had, I'm guessing he broke in because she didn't want him there. I don't know how he got into the house. He got into her parents' house, which is where she was living, and he, like... There was, like, a struggle with them at the top of the stairs, and she ended up falling down the stairs. And then he went down there after her, and he had a gun, and he raped her, like, over and over, and, like, beat her up, and you know, God knows what else.
So, did they break up at one point before this happened, or he was with her, broke into her house?
No, like, I think they had broken up. They had recently broken up.
Oh.
And she was, like, trying to get out of,
like,
the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he, like, showed up one day, I think, when her parents weren't home. So it was just her that was there.
And
that's what it said in the, when I was going through all the Courier Journal articles, it said that it was in the basement of her parents' house. But it didn't give, like, let's say, it didn't give the details as to, like, what happened or, like, how he had ended up there or, you know, it didn't really go into a whole lot of detail on that part, but he was arrested and he was charged with kidnapping and raping. And this was November 19th, 1993.
Damn. You know, it's just sad what women have to go through.
Yeah.
All of our lives. Since before time. Women has always been... I loved the movement now for women. I do. Because all the bad shit has to happen, like this case, for something good to come out of it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's how shit works these days. People don't realize, like, what should be done before something bad happens. They only think about it after something bad happens.
And just a shout-out at the end, we'll put in a domestic violence hotline. But,
yeah,
it's scary being in them situations because you're so manipulated, you don't understand what's what. And then you're scared, so you're kind of there by fear, and you don't want to get away from it. Because I've been in plenty different ones, you know, different, you know, relationships like that to where they were bad. Right. And I've always been like, people always said, why didn't you get out? Or, see, this is a woman that was really trying to,
you know. See, and I've never been in, like, an actual, like, serious abusive relationship. Like, I had boyfriends in high school that, like, you know, emotionally abused me, but, like, calling me a slut and shit. But, like, not, like, an act where you're, like, living with someone or having... You know, if you have, like, three kids with somebody or something and you're in a situation and your kids are involved, like, right. I have no experience in, obviously, being a mother at all, but, like, just being in the bad situation like that, so.
Yeah, I mean.
Shout out to the women that have been through it, you know.
Right, and how strong they are.
They've gotten out.
Because now, you know, nowadays, there's so much stuff for people that's, that could help them.
Resources.
Yeah, there's a lot of resources that help them. Not like back in my 90s, like in the early 90s, I mean, you would see, like, I was always watching movies with, you remember the show, the movie Enough with Jennifer Lopez?
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite movies as a
kid. I love that movie.
And I did too, and I used to always be like, oh my God, I always thought that when you think of domestic violence situation, that's one of the movies
that comes up. Or Sleeping with the Enemy.
Are Sleeping with the Enemy, and a lot of people don't understand.
I love that movie. That's such a good movie.
Fatal Attraction, but for men, that's kind of for them.
That's true, yeah.
Because a lot of women do it too, you guys. It ain't just men.
That's true.
A lot of women are busting windows out.
Men can also be victims of domestic violence, 100%.
Very much true. And here at Easy Killer, we love our men and women.
We love everyone.
This podcast.
Except for fucking Donovan Harris.
Donovan fucking Harris.
Back to this bastard. His bond, he had a bond that was set at $25,000. Mm.
And they had to 10% it, I bet.
Actually, no. It was like a cash bond.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. And his sister, Tonya Lander, I don't know how you say that. It's spelled TONIALANDHERR, which I'm shouting her name out because Tanya, if you're listening to this, fuck you. It's not a good idea to bail your brother out of jail after he raped and beat up his girlfriend.
No.
So, just in case you didn't know that, now you do. So anyways, Tanya Lander, we're just going to go with that, she decided it was a good idea to bond her brother out of jail after he raped and kidnapped and assaulted his girlfriend. Mm. So, Mr. Donovan Harris was out of jail on December 1st. So, this was about 5 days before the murder.
Mm.
Which, if you haven't picked up on it yet, he was the one that killed her.
Right.
So, on December 6th, 1993, at approximately 8:45 p.m., which is around the time that the malls close, usually, Mary was leaving her job at the JCPenney hair salon inside of St. Matthew's Mall. So, it was cold you know, at that time, it's cold here. It's cold now. There's a fucking snowstorm going on. That's right. Why I can't record in person.
A whole fucking goddamn blizzard's going on, y'all.
Pretty much. So she sat in her car while she warmed it up, which, you know, is what a lot of people do. So all of a sudden, she's sitting there, starting her, you know, her car's running. She's warming it up. A man comes up to her window and shoots her in the head.
Damn.
In the chest 3 times. And the front, both of her front windows were completely shot out. And she was found slumped over the wheel.
Right.
And she was leaning into a bouquet of flowers and balloons. Is that not the fucking worst thing you ever heard in your entire life?
Oh my god, that's so sad.
Like, on her fucking 21st birthday.
Like, she had her whole life in this... You know, I never... I think those are the worst...
As a young woman, your 21st birthday is like...
Right.
It's fucking sacred, okay?
It's coming.
I hated my life up until I turned 21, and then I was like, you know what? Life can be a little more manageable with alcohol.
Right.
All right? You hear me?
But
for real.
It's so sad because these cases are always the ones that kind of get at me because I feel like, damn, man, she had her whole life ahead, and somebody, just because she didn't want to be with them,
yeah,
their whole life is gone. I never got these situations. You have to be bona fide fucking crazy to go this far over a woman or man. Harm them and kill them.
Well, I think obviously it was that, but I think the main reason why he did it was because he was facing jail time.
Right. Because
and
he raped her.
Yeah, and he knew she was going to testify against him, and he wanted to fuck. That shit happens all the time. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Think
someone,
that...
you're ready to get ready to testify in court on someone, and then you end up murdered. Like, okay, that's not a coincidence, but...
Right. It's crazy to me. Like,
So, there were about, like, at least eight shell casings in her car that came from a 9mm gun. Mall security said that they heard the gunshots, and then they saw a man running away.
That's
and
all
then
I got.
Other witnesses around the mall said they saw a man running through a wooded area near the mall right after they heard gunshots. So they heard gunshots and they saw this man running through a wooded area. Which there's a lot of wooded areas around by St.
Yeah, Michael's there
mall.
Is.
So, when the murder was originally reported the day after, obviously, in the Courier-Journal, which was 12/7/93, and the police described the suspect as a white male with blonde hair in his early 20s, 5'9", and wearing a white baseball cap.
Damn.
And they said they had reason to believe that Mary knew her murderer because there was no evidence of a robbery. But I feel like they were just putting all of this information out, like, let me finish what I'm saying before I even say that. Police dogs picked up a trail running through Beargrass Creek, which is the area that surrounds St. Matthew's Mall, but the dogs eventually lost the trail. So the police assumed that he had parked a car nearby to get away and that this was, like, premeditated.
Right.
But when they originally reported this, they didn't say anything about her being raped at gunpoint 3 weeks earlier and tying the two murders together. They were just like, oh, this is a suspect. This is who we're looking for.
Like, common sense. Ding, ding, ding.
Right. I mean, I think they knew that at the time, but they weren't, you know what I mean? They just weren't reporting it. So, because then later I remember reading that one of the detectives had heard her name come through the radio.
Right.
And he immediately, like, remembered who she was and, like, knew who was responsible for it.
Probably. That's my biggest fear, is getting, like, a police officer coming in the middle of the night and telling me something happened to my child. Ugh.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
Mm. It's so
especially
sad.
When it could have been prevented.
Exactly. And it's, you know, all these stories kind of have the same, you know, kind of...
Right,
blanked. Yeah.
It shouldn't have fucking happened, and it happened.
Yeah, and it's sad.
None of this stuff should have happened, but it's a whole different situation when, like, it's like the justice system fails you.
And she basically saved a lot of other women after this. Because they came up with the vine.
Yeah. So, the next day after, it was, you know, the next day after the murder, around 11:30 p.m., the SWAT team shows up to his house. And they observed him moving about in his apartment, but they were trying to, like, contact him or make contact with him, basically. They were calling out over the system, and he was not speaking with them, but they knew he was there. So around 2 a.m., they began forceful entry into his apartment.
So they knew. Where'd he live at?
Oh, I can't remember. I knew you were going to ask me something like that.
I know, sorry. I'd be asking
Actually, I do remember. I had the address. All right, this is the weirdest thing. I can't remember what it
said. It's not weird to me.
But I had the address, and I looked it up, and I could not find it in Louisville. Like, the address did not exist.
Right.
But I think it was an apartment complex. That might be why. But
yeah, they probably done been tore up. Tore down.
Exactly. Yeah, anything's possible. So right. They started off by, they let off tear gas in his apartment, and they heard him coughing and, like, struggling, and, like, he's obviously fucked up. But he still would not, like, say anything to them or come out.
Right.
Or surrender himself at all. So they eventually knocked the door down, and they cornered him in his bedroom, and he, like, resisted arrest as much as you can resist arrest. He fought the officers. One officer had a broken knuckle, and he even sent himself to the hospital after this.
Right, I'm sure.
Minor injuries.
I bet you them cops fucked his ass up. I bet you they did.
Right, yeah. Well, he was in a fucking wheelchair.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Hey.
He didn't do it. Them fucking cops fucked his ass up because he killed that young girl. I'm telling you. Cops do that shit.
Well, you know what? In this situation.
In this situation, I'm like, I'm all for it because you're a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah. So, December 1st, he was let out because of, I'm sorry, I'm talking, you know, in the past tense again, but just, you know, backtracking, he was let out on December 1st. The murder happened on December 5th because
right.
Tonya Lander, his sister, posted bail. Mary, her family, police, and prosecutors, all these people were not notified of his release.
Yeah. So I bet you it got him thinking, what can we do to make sure this never happens again? So was it her family and collectively people around the community that decided to, maybe we should have a system that it calls was, you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of, like, the county attorney's office.
Yeah.
I believe that, like, put it into, you know.
It's so sad that, you know, you're minding your own business. You're not fucking bothering anybody. You go out to your car, it's your birthday, right. And somebody fucking cowardly.
You just got fucking raped 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And you think you're fine.
You think you're safe. Because
you think he's in jail.
And ladies out there.
And someone comes fucking out of the woodwork with $25,000 in cash.
Right.
Like, what the fuck?
Right. And ladies, just remember, and this is why we say this, always, when you get in your car, leave.
Yeah, leave. And
don't sit. Don't play on your phone.
When you're walking to your car, you need to have fucking rubberneck. You need a rubberneck every fucking direction around where you're going. If you
or try not to walk out.
Idiot, like a fucking Woody the Woodpecker pecking around, then that's what you're going to have to do.
Right.
Because you got to always be aware of your surroundings. And I cannot fucking trust that enough.
Have people walk you out. Sometimes we get caught up in our own world. I can see that nowadays. Back then in 93, you ain't on your phone. You're not doing nothing. You're walking out minding your business. There's not that many distractions then. But nowadays, I could see somebody walking out not paying attention.
Sitting on their phone or in the car.
Some people sat out in the car back then and warmed it up.
Right. And that's you can't probably do that anymore, apparently.
Right. Supposedly, that's legal, but why the fuck have push to start if you can't fucking sit out there and let your car run? But it's just crazy. It's so sad that this family had to go through that. I understand that it helped a lot of other people, but I'm pretty sure they would probably want their daughter back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know I would.
Right.
But, so yeah, nobody, especially Mary and her family, were notified that he was released. And he was dangerous. And he was a danger to her and to her family, obviously. December 10th, 5 days after the murder, he appeared in court and he was in a wheelchair, like I said previously.
Right.
He had a bandaged foot, which was an injury from his arrest a few days earlier. And he pleaded not guilty, of course.
Yeah.
That's what motherfucking bitch-ass motherfuckers do.
Right.
The judge set his bond at $1 million.
Like, bring, hey, LaToya, Tanya, Tony, whatever.
Yeah, where are you at now, Tanya?
Bring the money.
Where's that money at now, Tanya?
I mean, I get, this is where I'll go as far as saying that I can understand a brother and sister's bond because I have his brother. But even if my brother raped a woman and harmed them.
Do you just have $25,000 laying around to fucking bail your brother out of jail, though?
Like, no, but I'm pretty sure.
That's another thing,
are you
too.
Sure,
like,
it wasn't?
That's a lot of fucking money.
Are you sure it wasn't 10% or was it really the full cash bond?
No, it was the full, and that's what was so crazy about it.
Oh, shit. That's you, 25 grand?
It was a cash bond.
Money talks and bullshit walks, bro. I'm telling you. For real. If you have money, you can get away with a lot of shit in this city.
Now, I don't know if his next bond was 10% or not.
Oh, fuck no.
But even if it was, that, you know.
So what happened to him? Did he end up going to prison?
Yes. But he had to wait trial for a while. And he waited for his trial for a while.
Yeah, he probably, his lawyer's smart and tried to postpone it out further so the rawness of the murder wouldn't affect the jury. That's what a lot of defense attorneys do.
So, but, you know, in the time that he was awaiting his trial, Jefferson County, which is the county that this happened in, which we live in, he at least started to brainstorm some sort of system that they could come up with that would alert victims of domestic violence or other violent crimes of their offender release from prison or jail,
Great idea.
Yeah. And they said there was already a system in place at the time to allow victims to be notified, but it was only by request
of the victim.
Exactly.
Which now,
this was only after the offender had been convicted of the crime.
Yeah.
Not just when the offender was awaiting trial. So the problem with Mary's situation was that he was arrested but not yet convicted.
Right.
So if he had been convicted of this crime, then she would have been notified had she requested to be notified. But since he was just awaiting trial, there was no way for her to know because he had not been convicted of it. Just because you haven't been convicted of a murder or of whatever, you know, it is, that doesn't mean that you're not still a danger to society and to the people that are accusing you of this crime.
It's a lot of trial and error now, and, you know, it's like the women and men have to go through so much shit to get the right proper, you know, ideas for all these crazy things that happen. So you got like the Vine now, and you have, of course, they're a lot more stricter now on DVOs in Louisville, like in EPOs, like when they used to not be until the same situation of domestic violence. A guy killed his ex-wife and her and his kids and himself. It's the family annihilators, or is that how you say it?
Annihilators, yeah.
Yeah, family annihilators, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, so December 14th, 1983, which is roughly a week and a little change after the murder, the Jefferson County attorney, Mike Conleaf, I don't know how you say that, announced that his department would begin making phone calls on January 3rd, 1994, the following year, to victims upon offenders' release during normal business hours only. But they were still working on a system that could alert victims 24/7. So at this time, they were calling and alerting victims, but only during, like, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday.
Right. So when the people were getting out Friday night, you wouldn't have known till Monday morning.
Exactly, exactly.
Which just causes still the same issue that just happened to Mary.
And at the time, there was an average of 33 violent offenders that were released from the Jefferson County Jail each day.
Damn.
That's a lot of victims that need to be, you know what I mean? Need to be notified of this. So the city of J-Town, which is where Mary lived, and we say the city of J-Town, it sounds like it's not really a different city.
It's literally right up the road.
It's a city within the city, and it's also Jefferson Town, but we call it J-Town here.
Which is kind of the East End, which, let me give you a little snippet. Yeah. So there's, Louisville is like a bunch of different little bitty cities in one. So you basically have, like, the downtown Louisville, which is right by the Ohio River. You got the Great Lawn. To the west of that is Portland and the West End, which is more urban areas. To the right, if you're, like, standing in downtown Louisville, to the east is where more of the Bardstown Roads, New Lou, the newer Louisville hippie they're trying to make. Yeah, hippie shit. And then you go further east, which is
hippies
like which is like further Prospect and all that. If you come inward, that's when you run into things like the South End, things of that nature. Like, and then you go back
south side,
yeah. and then you just basically deal, you know, kind of. It's like we got Fairdale inside of Louisville. We got J-Town inside of Louisville. We got Middletown inside of Louisville. We have Portland, West End, East End, Prospect. I mean, it goes for days. It'll confuse you. So
we just got a bunch of names for a bunch of different shit that we don't need to. So the city of Jefferson Town, J-Town, as the locals call it, they granted Jefferson County Attorney's Office $50,000 to fund this program to get it off the ground and going.
Right.
So on January 3rd, 1994, it was the first day of this new system, and on that day, 18 offenders were released, and the original team that was assigned to this, they ran into a lot of errors, which is to be expected.
Right.
At least you're doing something. Coming out with a new system of stuff.
Right.
They couldn't get phone numbers for 8 of the victims. 5 of the victims didn't answer the phone. They left a voicemail for one, and family members of 4 of the victims were notified. But in addition to their phone calls, they also sent letters to all 18 victims the same day so that they would also be notified by mail.
Well, that's good.
Which is, yeah, that's a good second step to take.
Right.
So within the first 2 weeks of the system going live, there were 249 violent offenders released, and 108 of the victims were successfully notified on the day of the release.
Well, that's good. It saved some lives, I'm pretty sure.
The rest were informed via answering machine messages and letters. But yeah, I mean, that's just within 2 weeks of it going live, which I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, because now it's strictly phone, and it's 24 hours a day.
Right, there's no internet. I mean, there might be internet, but there's not internet in everyone's home at this point.
Right, so
the internet did not get into everyone's home until, like, the 2000s, at
least. Because I remember having one computer in my kitchen that we all used.
I didn't have I'm trying to think how old I was when I got
we rented our computer.
I was like 10, so this would have been 2003.
Right.
Was when we, I think was when we got a computer, but yeah, it was just the one computer in the kitchen and it was the dial up, the,
yeah. Right. You have reached, you've got mail. AOL.
Yeah.
I had Cutie.
I still remember the exact fucking pattern of the.
Oh my God. Internet. Mine was named Cutie. I had a AOL Cutie with the da booty.
One. Oh my God.
And
I'm
then.
Done with you. So on January 21st, 1994, Indiana followed Kentucky's lead and they approved a Senate bill that would make law enforcement agency in charge of each offender. That would make the law enforcement agency in charge of each offender responsible for notifying the victims within 24 hours on a weekday and 72 hours on a weekend, which is still, you know, room for improvement there.
Right.
But we're getting somewhere.
It's crazy to me. It's sad that she had to lose her life, but something so phenomenal came out of it.
Yeah. So, on December 1st, 1994, which is exactly a year after Donovan Harris was released from jail on bail, the Jefferson County Attorney's Office unveiled a computerized victim notification telephone system.
Yeah. They also have a Mary Byron project incorporated in J-Town that's associated with Mary Byron, actually, for Vine. Yep. For the Vine.
It's her family's...
business thing.
Foundation.
Yep.
So, this new computerized system would allow victims to be notified 24/7 of releases, so not just during normal business hours. And this was when the program was named Vine.
Right.
For victim information and notification every day. That's where the every day comes in, because before it wasn't every day. Now it's every day. Vine never sleeps. When an offender is released, this new Vine system will automate a call to the victim every 30 minutes until they are reached or a 24-hour expires.
Yeah.
After a 24-hour period expires. After the 24-hour period expires, operators will make manual phone calls to the victims.
You literally...
And then the letters are also still released the same day.
And they'll keep calling you back to back to back until you pick it up and you got to answer it and you got to say approve to not for them not to call you back or they'll keep calling you.
Right, yeah, you have to enter in, like, a PIN number or something.
Yeah.
That identifies who you are. And victims could also call a toll-free line, which was 574-VINE, and request info on the status of the inmate by using only the inmate's name.
Right.
So, it's pretty much anybody can call.
Yeah, nowadays, that's what I do when I want my when I was calling for family members to see when they got out.
Yep.
If I didn't have a way to get a hold of them or something, then I would get the Vine. You know, I'd hook them up to Vine, and I know.
Yeah. So, Mary's father, John Byron, revealed after her murder that he had called the county jail a few days prior to her murder, and he was told that Harris was still in custody.
Hmm.
Even though he wasn't.
Yeah. So nobody...
Somebody dropped the ball here.
Yeah, they
Which
probably...
Which one of you motherfuckers are going to take the fall for it?
So did they end up suing the city of Louisville?
They did. Her father said that if he had known that Donovan Harris was out of jail, he would have never let his daughter alone or out of his sight at all.
Right.
So, her parents filed a civil lawsuit against the St. Matthews police detective that failed to notify Mary Harris.
Right.
Mary Harris. Oh my God. Mary of Donovan Harris's release. So, this lawsuit was unfortunately eventually dismissed by the judge because there were no laws in place at the time that was holding law enforcement liable for her death. Which, it sucks, but at the same time, like, what are you going to do? There's no laws that are...
There ain't nothing, you know, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so that sucks for her parents, you know. Because, I mean, I understand, like, your daughter's murdered and, you know, you have the killer. But at the same time, like, you still want to hold people accountable that you feel like
right.
you can hold
like,
accountable
who murdered, like, honestly, like, I would be, like, burning the world down. Like, there's no,
yeah.
if my child was murdered or if something happened to my child, I would do everything in my power to make sure everybody knew and heard my story, my child's story, everything.
Yeah, which is, I think, that's what her parents did.
Yeah.
After she was killed. So his trial began in 1995. I'm not sure on the exact date of which that happened. One of his friends, Vincent Sullivan, testified that Harris had called him the night that he murdered Mary, and he said, "I killed her, and now I'm going to kill myself." And he also asked Vincent to call his mom and his dad and tell them that he loves them and to forgive him for what he has done and pray to God to forgive him too.
Oh my God.
So this dude's just all fucked up. So he was found guilty of first degree murder on August 8th, 1995.
Right.
And he was sentenced to life in prison with an extra 18 year sentence for the rape and kidnapping of Mary that occurred before this happened. So March 25th, 1996, the governor signs the bill making the fine system a statewide law. So in 2000, the Mary Byron Foundation was created to help domestic violence victims and prevent domestic violence from happening and also give victims resources.
Right.
By 2000, 38 states have begun to use the fine system. And also in 2000, Pat Byron, who is Mary's mother, began speaking in high schools to educate students on domestic violence and what to do if they ever end up in the situation. Because if you don't think that it can happen to you, then you're wrong. Because it can happen to anybody. Anybody, right. No matter of your sex, no matter of your race, no matter of your color of your hair, of right. your eyes, your social status, your financial status, it can happen to anybody. So in 2005, he was up for parole, and he was denied parole, and they said that they would revisit his parole again in 2017, which obviously during this time, her parents, you know, advocated against him getting parole. So his parole was denied for that time.
Right.
And in 2017, he had a parole hearing, another one, and he cried, boo-hoo, poor Donovan, while the parole board read the details of his crime. And he also said during the hearing that he has no excuses for what happened, but he says that he was mad because Mary had broken up with him and would not give him a second chance. And so that is when he raped her, because he was frustrated because she broke up with him and didn't want to be with him anymore. So he was like, all right, well, I'm going to go rape her at gunpoint.
Right.
Because that solves things.
What the fuck is wrong with people?
So once he got out on bail, he became depressed and suicidal because of his possible prison sentence that he was facing. So he said the night that he killed her, he ran up to her car and he demanded that she let him into her car. Right. And she locked the doors and was like, no, you're not getting into my car. And that's when he shot her.
Damn.
And I just realized I said he shot her 3 times at the beginning, and that was wrong. He shot her 7 times.
Holy shit.
In the head and the chest area. So,
hopefully,
I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Hopefully in 2017 they didn't let him back out.
Well, you're about to find out. Dun, dun, dun. All right, so while he was in prison, this was part of his appeal to get out of prison. He said he completed a sex offender program, anger management, and he worked in the prison, which is pretty much what all fucking prisoners do. Oh, you worked in the prison. Good for you. And he took that anger management.
Right.
Here, take a gold star. All of which, he said, gave him a new way of processing his life. And he says that he deserves a second chance.
He does not. Hopefully.
That's what all fucking pieces of shit think.
If you murder somebody in cold blood, shoot them 7 times over them not liking you and wanting to be with you anymore, you deserve to rot in prison for the rest of your life.
Heard that. So, thanks to a petition, which I remember when this petition was going around on Facebook, by Mary's former classmates, which got over, like, 8,000-something signatures on it.
Right.
The Kentucky Parole Board decided in 2017 that Donovan Harris would serve his entire life sentence in prison without the possibility of parole.
So he ain't ever getting out.
He's never getting out.
That's great.
Yeah. And her mother said that she was relieved that she will never again have to fear the man that killed her daughter. Because obviously she was scared for her life, too, if he gets out.
Right.
Who knows what he's, you know what I mean?
Right.
She feared for her own safety if he was...
If you could do that to somebody you love, you rape them, then you come back and you murder them, what the fuck? What do you think they're going to do to the person that...
Exactly.
Now, his...
And the person that's trying to keep you behind bars.
Right. What's sad about this is that if this wasn't turned into such a movement that it did, he would have fell between the cracks and got out, like most cases.
Exactly.
But because they had Vine and it was all on board and it started something, he was never going to get out. I bet you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? What are you going to say? Here's the Vine line and here's a guy we made it for, but we just let him out of prison for the murder he did. No, it don't work like that.
Right. Yeah, and so now Vine is ran by a company called Apparis Insights.
Yeah.
And I actually had an interview to work for that company at one time. I think I told you about that.
Yeah, you did. I was like, wow.
I didn't get the job. But, like, I just heard it was a really good place to work, and then I read up on what it was. I didn't know what it was, and then I read up on it and I was like, oh, this is fucking cool. Like, right. I can do, you know what I mean? I really want to work for this company. That's awesome.
Right.
And so I saw they had an opening for a receptionist, which I'm probably overqualified for a receptionist position at this point, but
right.
I just went ahead and was like, I don't even care. Like, I just want to get my foot in the door with this company. They didn't want me. Hire me. Or sponsor my podcast.
Right. Subscribe.
Yeah, something. But yeah, so, I mean, it's okay, though, because they're doing good, honest work over there. Domestic violence hotline is 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 1-800-799-7233. And you can also go to thehotline.org, which is a online option where you can text instant message with someone that can help you, give you resources.
You can also find a lot of safe places around your different cities, and you can also, they will help with domestic violence. And I want you to know that you can go into any doctor's office, ER, every place, and they will help you. That's one of the first questions they ask when they come in, and you know, when a doctor comes in and starts talking to you, do you feel safe at home? That's why they ask that. And there's also now stickers in the bathroom when you go use the bathroom at any hospital that says, if you do not feel safe at home, and this is, you know, basically giving a number out for you to call them. So remember, hospitals and all that help with this domestic violence movement. Because sometimes you can't get away from your abuser, and he's just always around. And,
right, yeah. If you have built a life with them.
Right, there's... There's 100%. Different.
I can't get away from my husband and my dogs half the time, so I can only imagine
imagine.
There's like, a bad situation.
I always think about What's Love Got to Do with It with Angela Bassett in it.
Yep.
Like, that's the one movie. And that's another movie.
She beats Turner's ass at the end of the movie.
Right, right. Yeah. It came a lot of memes, but that movie used to be, like, everything to me. I loved it. I would watch it over and over again when I was a kid. I don't know why. I should not have been watching that, but... It was a good movie.
It's okay. I was watching The Players Club.
Yeah.
I said 9.5.
I said something about that, too. Well, I want to thank you guys for tuning in with us. We had a great time with our Mary Byron story, which has come to help tons of women. Probably.
Yeah, and you can also access the Vine system by going to vinelink.com.
Yep. If you ever need protection from somebody that's arrested, she just gave you the information to get...
Use it.
Yeah, use it. Use it, don't lose it.
No, don't lose it. So, keep yourself safe out there, everyone. And women, like I always say, be aware of your surroundings at all times.
Right, take care of yourselves, ladies. And men, and gentlemen. Take care of yourselves.
Everybody, take care. And don't get fucked up.
Don't get fucked up. And have a good night. And keep it fucking
take it easy. Take it easy, killer.